When the gospel was being read just then, you heard Jesus' conclusion, whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile. It's what comes out of a person from within, from the human heart, that defiles. Now, my guess is, if you had any thoughts when that was being read, that they were something like, well, of course. It's obvious, isn't it? There's nothing new to learn here. We know food's food. We consider religions with food taboos to be a bit naive and primitive and, if anything, to be pitied. And we conclude, as always, well, Jesus was right. But let's not get too ahead of ourselves. There is one big problem. The food taboos were not human inventions. They were God's orders, along with the Ten Commandments and the instructions about circumcision and the Sabbath and the sacrifices in the temple. In Jesus' Jewish society, people would not dream of eating pig or camel or hare or owl or ostrich or stork. And these food taboos were definitely on the A-list of what God wants. So how come Jesus now says they aren't all that important? I mean, these banned creatures of land, sea and air, God had said through Moses, they are unclean for you and detestable to you and may not be eaten. And if someone so much as touched the carcass of such an animal, he was unclean for the rest of the day. No wonder people assumed that eating any of these creatures would cut them off from God and make them unworthy of belonging to God's people because they'd become so unclean. Now, there were, of course, some who, either through desperation or indifference or both, who did partake of this loathed Gentile food, and so they were despised and shunned by the general society. Of course, the foods themselves were not physically harmful. Jewish people were permitted to sell them or to give them to people who were not Jewish. This was just ceremonial uncleanness, but it was important. And so Jesus does seem to be skating on thin ice when he downgrades these laws' status to not at all important, all that important. Particularly as we see in the reading from St. Mark that we just heard, how the church interpreted this stand that he'd taken. Because Mark writes, thus Jesus declared all foods clean. It's pretty blunt. Now, so far in Mark's gospel this Lent, we have encountered Jesus, first of all, forgiving sins, which surely only God can do. And then last week we encountered him ordering the wind and the waves to settle down, as if he was God. And now this, telling the troops that God's instruction is best neglected. It's not any surprise then that Jesus was soon accused of rubbishing God's law. So he then declared, I have not come to abolish the law, not one jot or tittle, not one dotted I or crossed T will pass from the law. And some listeners, you could excuse them for thinking, well, he says one thing one day that the laws don't matter and another thing the other day the laws do matter. And it's not hard to see why opposition to Jesus is building up, not just among the pompous synagogue leaders who he so often upstages, but also among humble, sincere Jewish believers who were focused on pleasing God. In fact, John's Gospel records Jesus saying, the Father and I are one, making himself equal to God. No wonder they started picking up stones to hurl at him and even meeting to plot his death. So the question comes up, has Jesus overstepped his authority a bit? Has he got too big for his boots? Well, of course, on the other hand, the severely crippled man, whose sins he forgave 2 weeks ago, did get up and walk And the wind and the waves did subside when he told them to. So God does seem to be happy to be partnering Jesus. But still, if he is contradicting God, then we do still have a problem. And it's the very same problem that the disciples had, as we heard in the reading today. They asked him about the parable, and they did this in such a way that Jesus realised they were not with him. And he said to them, "Do you also fail to understand?" This was his frustrated and disappointed rebuke. Well, what defence could Jesus have? Well, the answer is the rest of the Old Testament. There the prophets regularly tore their hair out because the people were often conscientiously keeping the outward rules, like the food taboos, but their hearts and lives were godless and so tragic. So God says, for instance, through Jeremiah, "Will you steal, murder, commit adultery, swear falsely, make offerings to Baal, go after other gods, and then come and stand before me in my house, this house which is called by my name, and say, 'Oh, we are safe'? Because you did not listen, I will cast you out of my sight." Or as he said a century earlier through Isaiah, "This people honours me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me." So, keeping the rules given by God is helpful, but sincerity is essential. Or Psalm 51 that we heard read this morning, where probably King David talks to God about the temple sacrifices, the sacrifices that God has commanded. And he says to him, "You have no delight in sacrifice. If I were to give a burnt offering, you would not be pleased." And he goes to explain, "The sacrifice acceptable to God is a broken spirit." And then he considers when the broken and contrite heart is there in the sacrificer, he says, "Then you will delight in sacrifices, in burnt offerings." So Jesus is not throwing out God's old rules and making up his own new replacements. He is, in fact, broadcasting the Old Testament message. Namely, all the laws are great, of course, when you keep them from your heart. These rules are part of the great privilege of being Jewish. They are arbitrary badges to remind the Jewish people that they are a special people with a special purpose and a special relationship to the Creator of all. And so, like the commandments about males being circumcised or everybody refraining from working on the Sabbath, God had also given them rules about what's not to be eaten. They're to follow these laws generation after generation. The Jewish people won't forget that they belong to God, that nothing's more important than this, and that God is holy, so they had to be holy too to stay in good with him. This deliberately being different from everyone else in these different ways helps to pound that in from the day they're born. But of course, this holiness has to be in the people's hearts. That, however, is a bit difficult to see. And so there are outward signs. They're set up that everyone can see. And so everyone can be constantly reminded that they and all the other people of their nation are called to belong to God, the God of holiness, the holiness that's so vital. But of course, people being people, there was a great danger of looking at the outward visible features and totally forgetting the inner invisible features that God was looking for. It was far too easy to assume that if I don't break the outward rules, then I must be fine. I won't be defiled. And so I can fool myself that outward behaviour was all that was required. Carefully keeping God's rules can even become an obstruction that masks the true state by kidding us that our outward keeping of the rules is all that matters, deluding us that we've passed when in fact we've failed. Well, it's no wonder the prophets protested and Jesus endorsed their protest. There is nothing, he said, outside a person that by going in can defile. It's what comes out from within, from the heart, that defiles. Now, when Jesus said this, he and his Jewish hearers were thinking, of course, solely about food and the food rules that they were required to follow, all the edibles that God had banned from his people. However, there are other things that can enter us from outside that do have a dreadful result. Jesus was surely exaggerating on another occasion in order to make an impression when he said, if your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out. But he was saying, if looking at something stirs up some sinful longing in you, then stop looking at it. Different people have different weaknesses. For some, it's a mistake to look at horror movies. For others, it's pornography. For others, it's luxury magazines or racist publications or gambling websites, because these productions stir up each one's individual failings, our longings to do wrong. Some external things can help defile us where our hearts are already flawed. They are external things which can so easily lead us astray. Jesus said so, and told us what to do with them. Pluck it out of your life. Don't look at it at all. However, that's not the point that he's talking about in this bit that we're looking at today. His point, of course, is about where defilement comes from. But he does have another point in the story we read today, one that seems to deeply alarm Jesus. In verse 18, he says to his disciples, "Do you also fail to understand? Don't you see? How is it that you've not caught on?" He's confused and really disappointed. A decade ago, a young woman, celebrity in England, hired a taxi to take her to Stamford Bridge, the well-known home ground of the famous London football club Chelsea. A trip of 140 kilometres south to London. When he picked her up, the driver put Stamford Bridge into his sat-nav and happily headed off. 2 hours later, they arrived at the Yorkshire village of Stamford Bridge, 220 kilometres north, and she was now 360 kilometres away from the football. "Don't you know where Stamford Bridge is?" exploded the apoplectic passenger to the driver's great embarrassment. Maybe you can recall some occasion when you made a fool of yourself and an appalled sufferer said to you, "Don't you see what you ought to see?" And Jesus said the very same words to the disciples that day. "Don't you see that whatever goes into a person cannot defile, since it enters not the heart? It's what comes out of a person that defiles." Jesus was disappointed with his disciples' failure to be crystal clear on this issue. After all the various prophets had said, and after being with Jesus for the past year or two, how is it that they don't know? Jesus obviously thinks that at least by now, after a year or two of listening to him, his disciples would have come to take on fully what these and the other Old Testament prophets had been trumpeting. By now, they should clearly see that the ritual defilement is the surface problem, while what goes on in the heart is the real issue. The real defilement is in our hearts. And they have been alarmingly slow to pick this up. Jesus feels let down. This story suddenly is very relevant to us. How much have we failed to pick up from him and instead have continued to be wrong. So, do you really think it is your heart that concerns God the most about everything that there is that makes you up? Do you really think that God's big interest in you is with your heart? Because what he sees of you, what he thinks of you, where he meets with you, where he has plans for you, where he wants to delight in you, is in your heart. That most personal, hidden, unbridled, honest, inner part of you. The bit who you really are. Now that's his focus with you. That's where he loves you. That's where he forgives you. That's where he inspires you. That's where he transforms you when you turn to him. And it's also where we can be defiled, where our godliness and our ungodliness are found side by side. In our daydreams and fancies and delights, in our passions, commitments and longings. Well, what can be done then with the lusts and longings and wrong passions and self-indulgences that take seed in our hearts, mixed in with the beautiful and holy longings that we also have, and which, when fed, will defile us? How are we to handle, as Jesus said, the fornication, the theft, the murder, the adultery, the avarice, the wickedness, the deceit, the licentiousness, the envy, the slander, the pride, and the folly that come from within and defile a person? Well, I want to suggest just three things. Be deliberate, be brave, and be constant. Be deliberate. You have to decide now, if you haven't already, to invite Jesus into your heart, to the very centre of your character and being, where he will delight you, but also where he will begin to renovate you. That's a deliberate step. Be deliberate. Secondly, be brave, because then your conscience will often be stirred up as Jesus goes about his rebuilding process from the inside out. And our conscience being stirred up can be so unwelcome because we do not like change and we do not want change so often. Be deliberate, be brave, but also be constant. By turning to Jesus often, daily, deliberately turning to him in the Bible, and by praying. And to do this no matter how you feel. Talk to him about what was in the Bible, the bit that you read, what is on your mind, what's your agenda for today, what are your concerns, and it's good to ask, and how's my heart? And to listen for his answer. Deliberate and brave and constant. Jesus was distressed that his disciples were not sure that it was their hearts where he wanted to rule. We also can distress him if we keep our hearts private from him instead of inviting him in deliberately, bravely, and constantly.